Blog Talk Radio.
This is Mike Mays, and you're in the Sports Maze. I am so excited today. We have in the Sports Maze the number one attorney in the United States in not only men's law, but all forms of litigation. He is Adam Michael Sachs, and he practices in California, Arizona, New York, D.C., Alaska. He is the number one attorney. Guys, get out your notepads. I'm going to give you plenty of time to do that. Get out your pens, because this conversation with Adam Michael Sachs is going to save you so much headache. We should be on a GoFundMe site, and you should be paying $50 for this radio spot right now, at least. Adam Michael Sachs. Adam, how are you doing today?
I'm great, of course. How are you?
Fantastic. I'm all, you know, I do social commentary in sports. I'm all juiced up over, you know, what's going on in sports, the NCAA, the stuff that's going on in Chicago, the presidential race, watching what's going on there. And of course, I'm so curious to hear about men's rights, whether it's on how the men are treated in domestic violence situations, child custody, or if a guy wants to do what a woman does in, say, the adoption and surrogacy issues. If he just wants to start a family on his own, is he treated like a woman? How does that work, Adam?
Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned the NCAA. My undergraduate school, Stony Brook, out of New York, has made the cup for the first time in history.
Congratulations.
They're playing Kentucky today, I think. I'm very excited. And as far as being treated as the same between men and women, any guy who knows anything, who has any brains, okay, you know perfectly well that women's liberation movement had nothing to do with equality. It was about women getting special privileges. And there was what they called first wave feminism, which was in the early part of the 20th century, which was focused primarily on getting women the vote. And I think that we can all agree that it's a good thing that women are allowed to vote.
Second
wave feminism came in the mid-century, in like the 60s, and that was mostly with respect to women being allowed to work and to earn equal pay in the profession. And in spite of the wage gap claim, which is absolutely false, the reality is that women were revolutionized at that time. And now you have in America on any given day women doctors, women lawyers, women congressmen, whatever there is. So the career possibilities for women have never been better. And then you have third wave feminism. And as we see, women now are the majority of students in college, the majority in medical school, the majority in law school, something by a little. You have medical schools now where 8% women, 85% women, and what's happening gradually, basically, is actually the scales have been tipped so far, men cannot get a fair shake, period. And I see that today, right, I'm driving back from a long hearing today, the past few days, in court for a man wrongfully accused of domestic violence, and you see how fighting back and denying the claim is, it's like a 100-to-1 against. But the presumption is that the woman is a little victim, and the poor little virgin was sitting there when this horrible big bad wolf man came in and raped her and beat her up, and that she will never be the same, and she's traumatized. And that is the conception. If you look at the reality, the studies have shown in domestic violence that domestic violence is 50-50. It's a reality that there are violent women and violent men. They get into violent relationships. Women are attracted when they have mental issues to certain kinds of violent men themselves, and these people beat each other up. But when the cops come, for some strange reason, it's only the man that gets arrested. And
when you
they
talk
get
about that,
him to be treated, but the woman never gets treatment because
what is
she's
that
the victim.
Dominant aggressor? Is that what's referred to as the dominant aggressor? Is that
no,
the way men are looked at?
No, it's called the Duluth model, and it's based on research that was done in Duluth many years ago, and it is not questioned. If you look at the federal government, they provide massive funding to the counties and states throughout the country. And their law, the federal law, is called the VAWA, the Violence Against Women Act. Now, isn't that fascinating? Considering it's supposed to be neutral and against family violence, why is it always violence against women that we're worried about? What about violence against men? Can men be victims of domestic violence? Is that possible? Nah, of course not. Well, what pussy man would let his wife beat him up? The truth is that even though men are bigger, generally speaking, which is not always the case, and women are generally not as strong and more diminutive, women are more likely to use weapons. And so a man may not hit a woman back because when she hits him, he doesn't want to hit a woman. He's told you don't hit a girl. And meanwhile, she's going to pick up the remote control and bash him in the side of the face with it and cause even greater injury. And as I said, statistics show reality is that men and women are equally violent against one another. By the way, the vast majority, and I mean the vast majority, more than 80 to 90% of child molesters are women. Women are the ones that abuse children in vast numbers because they have more exposure to children. And, you know, the woman is raising the children more likely, and she's with them more, and she's abusing them. But we always hear about men who are pedophiles and hurting children and hiding in the bushes to grab a child, supposedly, when the reality is that women are the ones who are doing it most of the time. And that's not just a generalization. That's a fact. It is very, very difficult that we can't have an honest debate about these things because the presumptions are so ingrained. And, you know, I remember when I was on the schoolyard and a girl walks up and pushes me and I push her back and the teacher says, "You don't hit a girl." I mean, that is something that is fundamental in our thinking, and that has screwed up our ability to honestly debate this.
Well, you know, let me give you a personal experience with my son. When he was 10 years old at LAUSD schools, he was laying on one of those long benches during recess, 10 years old, and a girl, unprovoked, he wasn't even talking to her, and he's very quiet and soft-spoken. She kicked him in the nuts.
That's hilarious. By the way,
isn't
that a staple of comedy? With a guy who
yes, it is
the
staple
it's
of comedy.
It's hilarious. Oh, that's so funny. Okay, if you punched a woman and if you punched a woman in the breast, okay, you'd be the whole country would grind to a halt. They'd have yellow ribbons and pink ribbons and apologies and come on, it's absurd. And by the way, girls now, I had a case like this a few months ago where the girl. This is a whole big deal, but the girl actually punched the boy and said to him, "I know you can't punch me back." You know, and I have
where
cases
they,
now
where did she learn that from?
I have cases where children say to their father, daughters say to their father, "You know, if I say you touched me wrong, you're going to go to jail, and then what are you going to do?" You know,
where did she learn that from?
This is reality. Well. She has a whole society telling her that.
Right.
And it's a very serious problem because it skews the whole relationship between the sexes in a very sick way. And ultimately, and I believe this very strongly, I think that the changes that we've had are very harmful for women as well. I don't think that women are the big winners here. I think they're the big losers too. What's happened in our society has been the wholesale destruction of the family unit, and I don't think that women are happier or better off for it. In fact, there's a lot of studies now that actually show this now, that this generation of women that exists today are among the least happy in terms of happiness in their lives and satisfaction in their lives of any women previous in history. I think that it's very natural for human beings, men and women, to want to bond, to want to form families, to want to have children, to want to have people that they love and that they care about. And what we've done in our society is we've thrown a monkey wrench into all that. And we've given people false expectations and very confused values. And somehow a woman thinks that the most important thing in the world today is to have a Chanel bag. And I don't think that that leads to any kind of real happiness or satisfaction in life. And the women that I talk to that are getting divorced, a lot of them were married to very good men. I mean, you always hear stories of men that are horrible and abusive, and I'm sure that exists, and I know it exists. But there was an interesting article I read a few months ago about this, where all these women are married to really good men, and they have a nice home and a family with children that are nice, and everything's going well, but somehow they're not satisfied. It's not enough.
They want to move on. They've grown apart.
No drama. They don't talk about the man. They talk about themselves. They say that they don't feel satisfied. They don't feel self-actualized. They don't feel that they're able to express their own identity. Okay? And so the one thing that they're pretty sure is that it's the man's fault. And so they put the screws to him. They break up the family. He's in shock. He's pleading to go to therapy, which they refuse to do. And what you have is the ruination of a whole society rotting from the inside out. If you look at the Arabic societies, and the reason that they hate the United States the way they do is partially because of this. Because they look at us as people without values. And they say, what's wrong with you? Why can't you control your women? And I'm not saying that women are supposed to be controlled, and I don't agree with veiling women and so forth. But there is something in between somewhere. And what we've done in our society is completely outrageous and out of control. Where a woman now can make an accusation based on absolutely nothing, and the man immediately is jailed, thrown out of his house. He doesn't necessarily even get a hearing. Well, she did the accusation for free. He has to hire a lawyer. He has to fight, and she can keep it up forever and ever and ever. And I have seen the outgrowth of how vindictive and sick women can be doing this. And we have a society that encourages it, allows it, and promotes it. And if you're on the wrong end of this as a man, forget it. Your life is over.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about the Duke lacrosse players. Let's talk about the UVA story and athletes. And let's talk about just Joe on the street that are accused of sexual assault or rape. The woman falls under the rape shield law. She has anonymity, and the guy's name is plastered all over the newspapers, social media, everything, when he is accused, just accused. He's not guilty, but just by his name being plastered as being accused, that's as good as guilty. If he's an NFL player accused, he's going to lose his job, and he's going to have that social stigma. If he's a politician, if he's just a guy working down at the local store, he's an accused domestic abuser or accused rapist. Why isn't there equanimity in the law where the man's identity is protected under a rape shield law until he's proven guilty? Has there ever been any attempt at legislation? And am I crazy to think that men should be innocent until proven guilty and have their identity protected, Adam?
I don't want you to get too emotional about this, okay? The horse has already left the barn, okay? You understand what I mean by that, okay?
But can't there be legislation?
No, there's no fixing this, okay? The reality is that this is how it is now, and if anything, it's going to be getting worse, okay? Now, if you want to talk about practical things, I do want to talk about this today. I think there are serious alternatives and alternatives in lifestyles, and I need to talk to you about that. I want to talk about that because I don't think it's enough to be a complainer, what we call in my religion a kvetch,
mm-hmm.
and just complain about problems. I think it's very important to talk about alternatives and solutions. And I think there are some. But at the same time, the paradigm that used to exist is dead. It's really dead. And we are watching the death throes of marriage and family, what we call traditional family. It's gone. And guys now that get involved in it, guys that get married and have kids, as far as I'm concerned, are absolute fools, okay? Because women are extremely impulsive, and they are essentially emotionally, mentally very childish. And you're betting your entire life, all your money, your family, and everything on the fact that you might piss her off and she dials 911 and just on an impulse, and that sets in motion something that you cannot stop. Okay?
Right.
Now, the idea that a woman is angry at you temporarily and she throws a little temper tantrum because you didn't buy her what she thought she wanted, or you didn't listen to her, or you were rude to her, whatever the hell her problem is at that moment. She calls 911, which happens, and the cops come, and she says, oh, he's an asshole, whatever. Okay? Once the charges start getting forwarded in the district attorney's office and so forth, they cannot be withdrawn. So when the woman later says, I changed my mind, I don't want to press charges,
we're in a weak cell area right now, and we expected this. So this is Mike Mays with attorney Adam Michael Sachs, and you can call in at 760-454-7012. We'll be getting Adam back right away. Let's give him a call right now. So don't worry, we'll have Adam right back. So I was telling a story where my son got kicked in the nuts by this girl, and she had to write an apology. I thought, you know what, that is, all right, he's back. Okay, and I'm going to get him, and I'll finish the story later. Okay, and
hello,
Adam's back on the line. Great.
I went under a tunnel, I think. I'm sorry.
That's right. You're clear. Yeah, we were.
I want to hear the kicked in the nuts story, but I also want to talk about what I was saying, which is
Let's finish out what you're saying.
In order to protect a woman, if a charge is levied, it cannot be undone. Okay, think about that. All right.
So it's the state versus Mr. Man.
All it is you getting crushed, okay? And you're going to have to hire an attorney. Might cost you $25,000, might cost you $50,000. If you don't have the money for that, you're going to get a public defender. You're going to get screwed, okay? And if you do go to court, your odds are 25-1 against that you're going to win, okay? These guys think that, you know, there's fairness. The presumption is that if a woman made the claim, it must be true, and they look at you and they go, oh, look at him, he's a creep, he obviously did it, he's guilty, he's a child molester, he's a vicious man, he beat up his wife, what a sorry excuse for a human being, you know, give him the chair, okay?
Yeah, that's the new buzzword of, by the way, my observation, the new buzzword for guys is creepy, he's a creep.
Yeah.
That
you know how
that,
it is. If you follow a woman home, and you've seen this in the movies, if you follow a woman home and you're an attractive guy and she likes you, then it's a real turn on. But if you follow her home and you're not attractive and she doesn't like you, then you're a creep. Okay? Then it's your stalker.
Yeah. Same circumstances, different reaction.
Oh, it's true. If you look at a lot of the behaviors that you see in films, if you really think about it, if you did these things, the woman would call you a stalker. But because it's George Clooney, it's okay. You see?
That's it, exactly.
But the reality is, if you look at
the way that our
society has... Or if you're Bill Cosby, for that matter. Bill Cosby. Another story, but I digress. Go right ahead.
The reality is that the sensationalism of being accused is now on the front page. And you mentioned the Duke Lacrosse case. I'm more reminded when I see Al Sharpton on television, and you know that Al Sharpton has gone to the White House to consult with the President Obama more than 100 times, okay?
Right.
And here is a man that is an absolute charlatan. When I was a teenager is when he became prominent, and he was talking about this girl, Tawana Brawley, who made a false rape accusation that was so obviously false at the time. It made absolutely no sense, but nobody cares. And then she pressed a charge against someone who had absolutely nothing to do with her that she claimed had raped her. And the real truth, when you finally boiled it all down, was that she had gone to see her boyfriend, and she wasn't allowed to go by her parents or her mother, and she was afraid that her mother was going to give her a spanking. And so she turned that upside down by saying that she was raped, and then that was the thing that turned her from being her mother being angry at her to her being a victim, which her mother, you know, forgave her for all her mistakes. If you look at this Mangum, who is the one with the Duke Lacrosse, okay, here is a sicko, disturbed woman, okay, who loved the attention. And I have to tell you, when I have seen these crimes happen and then done the things in court, you see the worst aspect of women. You see a woman who's mentally ill, who has five cops standing around her, hanging on her every word, and she loves the attention, and she's basking in the fact that everyone wants to hear what she has to say. And this is something that I think inclines a lot of false claims and false testimony. And you see how when there's no downside, which means that she can strike out against you and call you a rapist, and it costs her absolutely nothing, and you are the one who has been tarnished by that, and to defend yourself is going to cost you blood, sweat, and tears, and a lot of money. When we have something that's unequal like that, that's a very grave danger. And if you talk about, like, the football players and so forth, you see how many times these prominent people that are really accomplished have had their lives ruined. See, that's a tragedy. There's something that a woman takes a lot of joy in destroying something. That's something that she could never achieve. I've had so many women tell me that they're going to make sure that I get disbarred. They say that to me. I'm going to ruin your law license, okay? And this is something that I worked very hard for. This is something that they could never have, okay, that they are incapable of. But it turns them on, in theory, to be able to believe that they could destroy someone else's. So somehow they are going to ruin it for me, even though this is something that is absolutely beyond their own capacity to ever accomplish. And so when a woman is with an NFL player and she accuses him of rape, she gets a perverse pleasure. It's twisted. But she actually can get a perverse pleasure in knowing that somehow she is capable of taking down a great man. And if you look at the Duke Lacrosse, what they always talked about with Duke was the accuser had gone to community college, and the accused boys from the lacrosse team were in this very elite school, Duke University. And so the implication had been somehow that these rich boys believe that they can rape a poor black woman and get away with it, when in fact that had nothing to do with it. What's so appalling about that case is the prosecutor in North Carolina, as I recall, he ended up getting disbarred, and he knew perfectly well that they were innocent. He did not look at the evidence. He was facing an election, and he wanted to make sure that he won, and he had no concern whatsoever for the truth. And I have to tell you, in the case that I'm doing right now, I feel the exact same way. I think the prosecutor in my case knows perfectly well that the story is nonsense, and he knows that it doesn't make any sense, and he sees all the contradictions. He knows that his witnesses are perjuring themselves, and he doesn't care. And that's very, very disturbing. That's not what justice is supposed to be, okay? I mean, we're supposed to prosecute guilty people or, you know, so forth, and there's obviously a lot of heinous crimes in this world, but the prosecutor is supposed to use their discretion. And when the prosecutor looks at their witnesses and they know that the story doesn't make sense and that the witnesses are lying, they're not supposed to put that forward. They're supposed to use their prosecutorial discretion and say, we're not going to try this case because it's not rational. But that's not how it works today. And as a man, to put yourself at the mercy of a woman who can love you 1 second and then hate your guts the next second, it's irrational thinking. It's irrational to believe. And guys say this, oh, no, not my girlfriend, not my wife. She's not like that. Yeah, well, guess what? She is like that.
There's a mechanism inside, and then they get advice from, I guess, from guys that want to fuck them, and girlfriends that are bitter, and they become the cumulative battering ram from all of these men that want to get in their pants and women that are angry, and that's their forced anger towards this the guy that they loved so much. And
the reality is that women are, you know, ask them themselves. They'll tell you that they're mercurial. And I think that fundamentally a woman is with you, but she's got one eye on you and she's got one eye on the door to see if someone even better comes in. Okay? And when you talk about this changing thing, I mean, if you think about, for example, Catholicism, you know, the idea was you got married, it was done by God, and then there was no way to get divorced. There was no way to undo it. You were with that person forever. And maybe that calmed a woman's mind. Maybe it was like, this is my husband, and that's it. I've got to, like, you know, do the best I can with him. But what seems to have happened in that context until now is that somehow by being able to divorce easily or relatively easily, a woman is always looking to trade up. And when she's involved with you, she's, you know, pushing you to marry her. She's pushing you to have kids. But on some level, she still believes that there's better out there. And she turns on the television and she sees all these billionaires and people with jet planes and people with mansions. And she's programmed to be disappointed. You know, I don't have as much as those other girls do. And the guy I'm with, you don't make enough. You don't do enough for me. You're not romantic enough. You're not handsome enough. Whatever it is, there's always richer and better and bigger, you know? There's a great expression, which is, you know, when you're with a woman, she's not your girl. It's just your turn, okay? And that's the truth.
That is the truth.
So when you're with her and it's your turn, that's great. Good for you. You should be with her. But you should not harbor any illusions. So see, this is the biggest mistake, and this is so painful for me, because when you look at guys, you know, you say how women are such romantics. No, guys are romantics. And I see it now with guys that are imagining. I've got guys that got involved with strippers, that women that they literally met in strip clubs, and they believe somehow that their special dick and their love is going to reform this woman, okay? That somehow they're gonna make her, you know, loyal, and, you know, you can't turn a whore into a housewife. That's the truth.
I mean, These guys,
they get involved with women that are absolutely inappropriate. These guys tell me, oh yeah, I knew she was a hoe, you know, but then we had a baby, and it's like, are you out of your mind? Are you seriously insane? You're having a baby with a woman that you describe as a hoe? And you're surprised it didn't work out? I mean, the guys are literally amazed that it didn't work out. Whereas I would ask just the opposite. How could it have worked out? You know? I mean, there was no way that this was going to be anything except an unmitigated disaster. But when you take a step back from it, you know, guys are absolutely giving themselves false hopes and false expectations. in particular, if you look at our lifespans, I mean, in Shakespeare's time, you got married when you were a teenager, and then, you know, the woman would die in childbirth. So the whole marriage might be 4 or 5 years. But if you seriously believe today that you're going to marry someone when you're 20, and the average life expectancy is going to be 80 or 90 years old, that you're going to be with the same person for 70 years, you got to be kidding. There is no way that that is going to work out. And you know perfectly well how the process goes, that sure, at the beginning, you're excited, it's a new person, you're pretty hot for each other, and then you sort of, you know, calm down a little and you still like each other, but you know that that level of interest and desire, we say lust turns to disgust, okay? Over time, it diminishes very, very seriously. And so you may have had a couple of good months or maybe a good year or two, okay? But when you talk to married couples, and especially when children come along, okay, they are not having sex. It's not a joke. And people say, oh, no, not all women are like that. That's my favorite, no, Walt. Not all women are like that. I've got a friend who's got a great marriage. You want to know something? Bullshit, okay? I don't believe it. Because I talked to a lot of people that told me, oh, we're special, we've got a great marriage. And then I follow up with them 2 years later, and they're going through an acrimonious divorce of unbelievable, unbelievable anger and hostility. And the ones that carried on the most about how their marriage was special and worked, those are the ones that have the nastiest divorces. That's not a joke. And I talk to these people, and I've had clients like this, and I say, but did you guys say you were happy? And did you say everything was working out? And weren't, you know, didn't I talk to you? And now they say, well, what a bunch of baloney that was. Man, we were just going through the motions, you know? We were telling ourselves, I wanted to believe it. I was lying to myself, you know? And this is like so ridiculous. And then if you talk about sports, and I know that's really big for you, Michael, it's amazing to me, but I've got a lot of guys, and you know this, that get to live in the dirtiest part of the house, usually the garage or the basement, and they make a man cave and sit there and watch sports, right?
Right.
And the wife is pissed off, right? And she's like, oh, God damn it, John, are you watching that stupid ball game again, you know? And they actually put a refrigerator in the man cave so that they don't even have to meet her by accident in the kitchen, you know, while they're trying to get a cold beer, you know? So they can avoid her, you know, completely, you know? If you look at the humiliation of that, of a man fulfilling a woman's fantasy, women are the ones that want to get married. They're the ones that push for marriage and children. They're the ones that carry on, you know, let's buy a house. We need this. We need that. And guys go along with that. And then you, having made all her dreams come true, working your fingers to the bone in order to pay the bills, to buy her crap, all the stupid things that she wants, and she tells you, the whole house is mine, and you, loser, can have the dirty garage, okay? And you're so glad to be there, to be away from her, that you develop a man cave, you start watching sports all the time, you want to go to sleep in the bedroom, but you try to do it after she's already fallen asleep, okay?
Yeah.
They say in America that 40 to 60% of marriages are what they call sex starved, which means they have sex less than 10 times a year, okay? And if that to you sounds attractive, then you're going to be with this bitch who does you a big favor and wants to, you know, keep as limited as possible, but has to have sex with you occasionally, so you get 10 times a year, that's less than once a month, okay? If that sounds like paradise to you, kids screaming at you, and you're paying all the bills, and she tells you all day long what a loser you are, what a piece of crap you are, be my guest, okay? So I think that the reality, and we see this in every statistic, is that guys are voting with their feet. They're not getting married. They're rejecting all this other stuff, and they're changing the ways that they think. If you look at the revolutions, first of all, I think there was a certain movement where they called the pickup artists, which were guys that were picking up chicks. And you look at online dating. If you look at now, where online dating at one time, you had a profile, and you talked about the things that you liked and you wanted to go for walks on the beach or whatever, if you look now, that has devolved, not evolved, devolved to Tinder, where you have a picture of someone, and if you like them, you swipe left, and if you don't like them, you swipe right or vice versa. But the point is that you're not even going even any further. You don't even have a pretense. You're not even pretending to suggest that this is supposed to lead to a relationship. You're acknowledging that it's not going to, and that the only purpose of this is just to hook up, as it were. They call hookup culture. And older people like me, I'm in my 40s, are learning this, but young people and millennials, whatever they call themselves, they already know, okay? And I saw this TV dating show, and they had these two girls, these two twins they were. And the girl said, this one girl said that they were sisters. And one sister said to the other sister, "The only thing I want to know is how much he makes," okay? So that's the bottom line, okay? The woman is going on a date with you. It's not a date. She's looking at your shoes, okay, to see if what kind of shoes they are, because that's an indication of how much money you have. She wants to see how much she can get you to spend on her. And she's going to order the most expensive thing on the menu, and she wants you to pay for it with a gold card, okay? And she is talking to you about your career. Oh, you're a doctor? Are you a partner in your practice? Are you a surgeon? Are you doing plastic surgery? Oh, you're an attorney. Are you the senior partner? Are you doing litigation? Are you doing contracts? Okay? Because she is trying to size you up. I have had women say to me on dates, and I'm not kidding, "What is your zip code?" Okay? "What is your zip code?" Pretty sexy, huh? Why does she want to know my zip code? Because she wants to know how much my house probably is. If I live in a prestigious place,
they can go
or I live
search
in a dump. It's not funny, man.
It is not funny at all.
What? I think the guys have figured it out, and you can see it. And there are still those amongst us who are stupid, that never use a condom, that have unprotected sex. And you know what? They're all in child support, family court, getting screwed, having their wages garnished. And there are guys that get married, and they're screwed too. They get divorced, and they end up being a slave, paying lifetime alimony. Picture that. You're married to a woman for 10 years, you get a divorce, and then for the rest of her life, you have to pay her every month as long as she doesn't get remarried, and she'll make sure she never does.
Paying
$30,000 a month in child support, okay, and $30,000 a month in spousal support for the woman to get back on her feet, except there's no cutoff. So the wife gets it and collects it and collects it. And this guy is slaving away to make money. Meanwhile, the economy goes bad. He has problems with his job. Do they reduce the amount of alimony? No. It's still due every month. And guess what happens if you don't pay it? Oh, that's right. You go to jail. So we've reinstituted debtor's prison.
Exactly.
Back in the days of Dickens. If you don't pay your child support, you don't pay your spousal support, you can be held in contempt of court. Because the court ordered you to pay it. And the next thing you know, you're going to be serving 6 months or a year in jail. And people tell me, "Oh, you got to be kidding." No, I'm not kidding. Okay? That's reality. And so for guys, you know, you got to wake up. You got to wake up. And so, you know, later in the show, I'm going to talk about alternatives. But the reality is that this is the change in our society, and it is brutal. And if your mother says to you, "Oh, honey, when are you going to find a nice girl and settle down?" You tell her, "Never, okay? I'm settled down, okay? I'm as settled as I'm going to be. I got my own place. I got a job. I don't need a girl to settle me down, okay?" And if you live in a house and you're happy and you like your job, you get involved with a woman, the first thing she wants is for you to sell that house, to buy a different place, move to a different neighborhood, change jobs. She's got a whole plan for reworking you and remaking you, okay? Because that's the woman's disease, okay? There is something fundamentally sick and wrong in women's minds that they think that they have to get under the hood and change a man and reform him and make them into something that he's not, and something in their image of him. And when you don't manage to do the thing that she wants you to do, that she wants you to change and become the man that she expects and she projects on you. And when you don't do that, she's not going to blame herself for tinkering and not being successful. She's going to blame you for not changing to be what she wanted, okay? And she's going to hate your fucking guts, okay? I have sat with women clients that were so angry at their ex-husbands, so vindictive. And I even said to them, like, look, you're getting divorced. Okay, it didn't work out. All right, he wasn't the perfect husband. Okay, but why are you so angry? It's out of proportion, you know?
And right.
They're so irrational, and they're so full of venom. It's unbelievable. And they start telling me he had a tiny dick. I had to suck that little dick, okay? And he's stupid, and I told him to do this, and he didn't listen, and he didn't make enough money, and he's a loser, and he smells bad. And I'm like, okay, he smells bad, so we're divorcing him, right? Let's move on. You've got children with the guy. He's a piece of shit. And let me tell you something. There is no man in the world that a woman hates as much as the man that she's had children with. This is her greatest disappointment in terms of her whole identity. Even though you're the father of her children, she should love you. She should want to keep you in their lives and try to, you know, help you to encourage them and to help them grow up to be, you know, healthy adults and prosperous. And that is, it's just exactly the opposite. So the more she knows you, the more that you've had kids with her, the more connected you are in that respect, the more of a total disappointment you are, okay? And you think she'll hold back? No way. Does it hurt the children? Nah, she could care less. She's going to tell the kids, your father's a loser, your father's bisexual, your father told me to have an abortion on you, your father's an asshole, I hate his fucking guts, he cheated on us, he did this, he did that. Doesn't matter if it's true or not, okay? And when it comes to circumstances, especially when you look at very young children, but even so, children love their mother, as they should. But when the mother tells them toxic things, they tend to believe her. And, you know, you're not going to get your chance to tell your side of the story because she's going to preempt all that. And the kids, if they ever talk to social workers, they're going to be interviewed. They're going to say, I hate my father. My mother told me that he didn't even want me, that he urged her to have an abortion, and that it was up to my father, she would have had an abortion and I'd be dead. And then, therefore, my father is the biggest asshole in the entire world. I don't want to see him. I don't want to talk to him. I want his money. That's true. But he can go F himself. And that's really unbelievable. And a lot of guys tell me, well, okay, I've lost a lot of years with the kids, and it makes me sad not to see them grow up. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to get in touch with them when they turn 18 and they're adults and they're out of her control. Then I can talk to them. Not true. What she has done is poison the water and poison the well so methodically and so effectively that when the kids do turn 18 and they're young adults or whatever, and you try to get in touch with them, they are still holding all that anger towards you. And it sometimes dissipates. Some of them, it's true, go to college and they realize what their mother did. And they say, wow, my mother poisoned me against my father. And they figure it out. Eureka. And I've seen examples of the fathers getting back in their lives. But mostly, they hold on to the anger. They take their mother's side permanently. And you as a father are the most hated figure in the entire world. And by the way, even if you do get back in their lives, your kids are going to be so mentally ill for having gone through all this and having dealt with her as their mother and having her sickness and hostility pumped into them, this is going to be something that is going to be very, very difficult to overcome. If you look at the statistics now, divorce in a place like California, you're talking 2/3. That's a lot. If I gave you a suggestion that you invest in a business, and I'm going to tell you right up front, give me $1 million of your money to invest in this business, and it's 2/3 probability that you're going to lose all your money, you would not do it. But there's also
that's right.
Implication that's in there. If you talk about 2/3 divorce, that suggests that 1/3 of the people must be happily married. Wrong. think about all the people that are married that give up on themselves, that are just with some moron, can't help it, and say, well, I don't want a divorce. It's cheaper to keep her. What can you do? Blah, blah, blah. I think personally that of all the married people in the world, less than 1% are really content and happy. And I think that those are the people that have the lowest expectations. Okay?
Right.
You see these multi-billionaires that are married to a supermodel, but you know what? Supermodels, generally speaking, are not too bright. Okay? And maybe if you're a billionaire and you buy her every single thing she wants in the whole world, she eventually can shut up. But most likely, you're not a billionaire, and you're not going to be able to do that. And one way or another, she's not going to be very happy with the life that you gave her, no matter how opulent it truly is. And that, my friends, is reality. Anyone, culturally, your parents, your friends who are pushing you to get married, or you say, oh, you know, I'm Hispanic, in our Hispanic culture, you got to get married, blah, blah. You know what? Kiss my ass, okay? Things are changing. It's very important to recognize social change. And social change is around us. It's real. It's right in your face. And if you look at what's going on in our world, marriage is a dying institution. We are watching the final days. We are watching the death throes. And you should come to family court with me and see on any given day all these people that have ruined their lives and are being destroyed by marriage. And the reality is that our society and our social structure is morphing into something else, where you have different untraditional ways of living and untraditional families. And that's the future. And the people that are still living in the past are going to be washed away by history. You, as a person living today, have to recognize change and grab onto it and change with the change and not resist the change. And the idea that we had in the past of getting married and buying a house and having 2.2 children and working in some corporation for 25 years and they give you a gold watch and then you retire to Florida, those days are over. That's over. And that's not something you should probably want anyway. But I can tell you now that it's not going to go that way, no matter how hard you try to twist your whole life into a pretzel to make it do this thing that is no longer relevant. Your girlfriend, your fiance, your wife has her own cell phone. She has 15 email addresses. She has a Facebook account. Okay, she's in touch with friends and people that she knew in high school and college. And when the prom guy, the prom king, is in town, okay, he is going to look her up. And he's going to say, hey, let's meet for coffee. And she's going to go meet him for coffee. And she's going to go to a hotel. And she is going to fuck him, okay, 100%. And when she calls her girlfriend or her mother, and one time she would have called her mother and said, oh, I cheated on my husband, the mother would have been horrified. Now the mother and her friends are going to say, good for you. You go, girl. I don't like the way James treats you. That's the husband. That's you. I don't like the way James treats you. Anyway, he's a jerk. And you know, he promised to buy you a diamond, and he never did. And that house you have, he promised he was going to get you a new house, and he never did. I'm glad you had an affair. Good. He deserves it, okay? And that is how it's going to be, and that's the truth. And that circumstance now, when your girlfriend goes with her other friends that are single to girls' weekend in Vegas, okay, you think that they're playing cards? You really think so? You think that's what they're doing? Idiot.
I don't. You know what? I believe everything that you're saying. I would love to argue with you, Adam. I'd love to say
about
that,
what?
That to say that I had that the perfect relationship. I'd like to pick at something, just being a contrarian. I'd like to pick at something that you've said, but I can't. I can't pick at anything
from wanting
the therapy to anything, because I've been there and done that on so many things you're saying, like you have been on my shoulder and people that I known. So I'm just listening, saying, go ahead, tell me about my life. I can't argue with you. I want people to hear the truth and the reality, whether you're 20 years old working your way up, or
the sword of Damocles hasn't fallen on your head yet. Listen to Adam. Listen to him. Women are always looking to upgrade. And the happiest days of my life was when I was a serial monogamist, maybe 3 years. You know, each woman 3 months to a year. It stayed fresh enough. Broke up clean. Went on to the next. And I would, and that was it. That happy, fresh, goodbye, thank you. You know, you're not bad, I'm not bad, whatever it is. If they called me an asshole, that's okay. And that was it. And the worst was when I wanted to go all in a relationship. And just like you said, past emails, past phishing, all that crap. And the loser is the man that trusts the woman. The loser is the man that trusts the woman. I'm just, you know, blown away. Guys, you think you're going to have the Madonna? There's no such thing. It's when you go through the shit, it's going to be like losing a part of your body to a bomb. And I don't know how long it's going to take to get it back. But I can't. Everything that Adam's saying is real. It's just real. So where do we go from here, Adam? You know, you've given us the reality.
That's very important.
Where do we go? To the Philippines, where there's values and the women can't.
No.
They can't leave the island.
No. Let's talk about that. I'm very aware of that as well. One of the things that
we have the home court advantage when we're away there.
No. Well, that's true to some degree. But what we've heard about supposedly is what a bunch of sickos Western women are, or I've heard it a little more modestly put that it's American women. And so, what you need to do, which is a smart thing, is to get a foreign woman. I'm not talking about sex tourism. I mean, if you want to just go to the foreign countries and, you know, screw a lot of girls and come back, that's a different story. I'm talking about that you were supposed to go and get yourself a wife from Russia or the Ukraine or Thailand or the Philippines or South America or whatever. And I think that that has, in the past, worked for guys, and that has some possibility. But I tell you, I saw a very interesting documentary, and I recommend it very highly. It's free on YouTube. You can watch it. It's called A Racing Father, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's in Spanish, but it has subtitles if you don't speak Spanish. And it's based in Argentina, and it has nothing to do with the U.S. at all. And it shows an Argentinian woman, and they're married to Argentinian guys, and they're getting divorced. And they're not letting them see the kids. And they're screwing them over. And so that's the name of it, Erasing Father, because they're erasing the father. And the laws support them. They are the nastiest, most vindictive women you've ever seen. And you see these poor bastards, the fathers, where the laws are absolutely against them. Anything the woman claims is presumed to be true. Anything the man says is presumed to be false. And these guys are all saying, oh, I haven't seen my daughter in 12 years. I haven't seen my son in 6 years, et cetera, et cetera. And so this is Argentina, which is supposed to be a more traditional society. And I think the reality of what I've seen with foreign women, and by the way, I went on some of these, I went to some of these places. I was in Russia and Ukraine. I was in Argentina. I was in Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Thailand. I went to the Philippines, I went to China and elsewhere, and the reality is that if you marry one of these women, you get her a green card, you bring her to the United States, you're going to have about a year or two that's going to be pretty good, and by then she'll learn English, and she will become an American woman, and then she will put the screws to you.
You
like
are 100% correct. They're a quick study. Their friends will tell them, don't
damn
be
right.
satisfied
the way,
with what you got. Upgrade.
That's not a joke.
Here.
By the way,
yep.
The ones that I know, for example, from Russia, and I live in Los Angeles,
They're here for a little while, and they start reading the local Russian newspaper.
Right.
They make a connection to the local Russian community, and there actually is, you know, like these neighborhoods, you know, and they start hanging out there and meeting some of their, you know, making some girlfriends, which is okay. But then the girlfriends tell them, hey, why are you married to this American loser? Okay. Here's the phone number of a lawyer who specializes in this, and you could make a false claim of domestic violence and get your green card anyway. Okay. And then you can take his house, and you can take his bank account, and you can do whatever you want. What do you need him for? Okay. And I'm sorry to tell you, that 99 out of 100 women are going to think that that's a really great idea. Okay. So
Right. The
reality is that even in the case of foreign women, you're going to end up snake eyes, okay?
No, you can't bring them back.
Really,
you just can't bring them back.
Well, then you're a sex tourist. If you want to go to Thailand and fuck your brains out, that's fine, but that's not what I'm talking about. Okay?
No, I'm talking about
guys that wanted to have a
special, having a relationship there. A close friend of mine has his asawa, which means wife or sweetheart, in the Philippines, and he goes there four times a year. And in a few years, he's going to relocate. And
Let me just tell you that during the times when he's not there, she's got another five asawa guys. Okay, trust me.
That very well could be.
She's getting money from him.
It's a cottage industry,
and she's getting money from another guy, and the other guy buys her presents. And blah, blah, blah. So your friend is getting worked, okay? The reality
very well could be
that women are of a very certain mentality, and this is something that I don't think that they intend to even do. I think it's genetic. I think that women are not leaders. I think women are followers, and women have a need to attach themselves to a man in order to get resources from him. In particular, when they have a child, which is with the guy, let's say, that they need a man who's going to be able to provide them with protection and food, and especially when the child's very little and the child's dependent, that they need the guy to be able to go out and get money and bring it back for them. And, you know, a woman has a pregnancy for almost a year, and then she has to breastfeed for a couple of years, so she's at a lot of disadvantage, and the way that she can protect herself is by provisioning herself with a man that has resources. And I don't think this is something that is different among a Filipina woman or an American woman or any other kind of woman. I think this is something that women are always going to do. And like I said, one way or another, she's with you, and she's got one eye on you, and the other eye is at the door trying to see if someone even better comes in. And women sincerely believe, even if they have children, that they can find a better guy and that he will accept their children from another man. And that's something that men tend not to want to do. That tends to cause a lot of problems. And I wouldn't date a single mother. I think that's absolute stupidity. But the reality is that women are always looking to trade up. And women always overestimate their value. I mean, I have met women that are like in their 40s, and their looks are fading, and sagging tits, and the whole thing, and they still say, oh, I'm waiting for my billionaire to come along. Now you say, really? You're 42 years old. Don't you think you would have found him by now? Maybe it's time to adjust your standards a little bit, you know? A woman will tell you with a big smile, he's got to be rich, he's got to be gorgeous, he's got to be brilliant, he's got to have five houses and a jet and all this other shit. And you go, you know, unbelievable. You know, maybe it's time you recognize that this guy isn't around the corner, and start looking at who actually exists that you could partner up with and be happy with. That's what I mentioned at the beginning of our talk, is that women today are the most unhappy women in history. And I think that the expectations that they project and the things that they expect and the things that they think that they're entitled to have made them unhappy, because these things are not realistic and these things are not going to happen to them. And so they're screaming and they're throwing tantrums, but the reality is that things that they think they want are not even possible. I mean, if you want to make yourself unhappy, just think about this as a man. Okay, Michael, if you want to make yourself unhappy, the best way to do it is to crave something impossible. Think about it.
Yes.
Let's say that instead of falling in love with a woman, and you know, who's available and being happy with her. Let's say that you set your mind that you have to be either with a woman who's not available or a woman who doesn't like you. Okay? So let's say, remember Lancelot loved Guinevere, right?
Well, right.
Guinevere was married to King Arthur, right? All right, well, that's perfect. So Lancelot spends his whole entire life craving a woman that he can never have, okay? And then other women might be interested in him, but that doesn't matter because he wants Guinevere, but he can never have Guinevere because she's married to Arthur, right?
Right.
That is the absolute perfect way as a man to be unhappy, to crave something that doesn't exist for you. And you spend your whole life wishing for this thing and working for this thing, but it's the game is fixed in advance because it's something that you absolutely positively cannot achieve, you cannot have. Okay?
Right.
Now, the reality is that I got dumped by a girl a few years ago, and I was very sad about it, but she did not want me. And if I spend the rest of my life dreaming of getting her back, and it's not possible, then I can make myself absolutely unhappy for the rest of my life. And as a mature person, I have to let her go and forget about her and move on to be with women that do want to be with me. But when you see a woman will convince herself that what she needs is something that she can never have. So she needs a man who's gorgeous like George Clooney, rich like Donald Trump, and perfect in every way, and the right religion, and has her values, and does yoga, and believes in crystals, and loves
right.
dogs, and all this
yes.
bullshit, okay? But the reality is that she spends years looking for this thing that actually doesn't exist, she doesn't find it, and then she says, men are all assholes, there are no good men, life sucks, it's all bullshit, I feel like I'm settling, why should I have to settle? I don't know if you remember Sex and the City, but that was the big comment of Miranda, who was not that attractive, who was nasty, okay? And she always said, why should I settle? Why do I have to settle? Why should I? Well, you know why? Because life is reality. And if you want to have kids, woman, and you have a limited window, you know, of fertility and being able to set up a family, then I'm not saying you have to marry an asshole, but at the same time, you have to be realistic about what's actually out there and what's not possible. And this is something in particular that the modern woman has not been very good at, okay? And so you have a whole lot of women that are all bitching about the same bullshit that they can't find the rich guy, et cetera, and they're disappointed and they're angry. And the reality is that guys have got to start thinking with a completely different paradigm. But I don't think that getting married and having 2.2 kids is a very good idea. That's why, Michael, we were talking about surrogacy. I think what's going to happen, this is something that I'm going to get involved with because this is done by lawyers, generally speaking. But I think that what's going to happen is that guys are either just going to be single and go on dates and have sex with women and, you know, do what you've talked about, serial monogamy, you know? But if guys are not going to do that, if guys that particularly crave having an heir, you know, guys that want to have a son, guys that want to have a family, I think what guys are going to do is they're going to do what the gays do. They're going to have a child on their own. Now, women obviously have an advantage where a woman can get a sperm donor and have a child on her own. I think guys are going to do surrogacy where they're going to pay a woman to gestate a child for them. And this is something that's especially being done in other countries. Just in the way that, you know, like the tech support is being handled in another country. So you call for help with your HP computer and you end up on the phone with someone in India, you're going to actually
right.
hire a woman in India and she is going to gestate the child for you. You're going to go to India, pick up your child, bring it back to the U.S. I'm going to handle your paperwork in terms of adoptions and visas and all that good stuff. And you are going to have a child, which is your child. The child only needs one functioning parent. And so there's no reason it has to be a woman. Men are perfectly good at being parents. And as a man, maybe you have a girlfriend who helps you with the kid, maybe your mother helps you, your sister helps you, but whether you do or you don't, the reality is that you are going to have a child on your own. It's going to be your child, so you don't have to get into conversations about paying her child support or paying some woman, you know, attorney fees, or fighting about what religion the kid's going to be, or fighting about what school the kid's going to go to. It's going to be your child. You're going to be the father, and you're going to raise that child on your own. Maybe you have more than one. That's going to be the family of the future. Because
and that'll take the jurisdiction out of the United States courts. If it's a foreign woman, yep.
It's got nothing to do with the courts. It's your child. The reality is going to be that to marry a woman and to take a loaded gun and put it in her hand and dare her to shoot you, okay, that's not going to happen anymore. Guys are not going to take that risk. Okay, human beings are naturally risk adverse. And what you see today is a young man in his 20s whose older brother got screwed in a divorce, whose uncle got screwed in a divorce, whose father got screwed in a divorce, and the guy is finally going to say, this young man is going to say, you know what? I'm not going to do it. I don't give a shit. I don't care. I know sex is great and I want to get laid, but getting married doesn't get you laid. Okay? And that's the reality. That's going to be a major paradigm shift where guys, and this is happening right before our eyes, guys are saying, no way. When I go on a date with a woman and we, you know, fool around and we see each other a couple of times and she starts telling me, someday I want to have a big wedding and someday I want to, you know what, I'm already halfway out the door. I don't fucking want to hear it. That's her wish. That's her dream. That is not my dream. And I know that by helping her to fulfill her dream, I'm going to get zero appreciation, zero understanding, zero connection, zero empathy, zero, period. And that for me is too much, just much too much. That's reality. Mike?
And we just had a little drop connection there with Adam, and he's right back with us. And thanks for calling back in. Yeah, we just had a quick drop off there, but it was just for a moment. So,
What was the last thing you got?
About men, the new generation's coming up and just not getting married, just being having it simpler. And having kids and not needing women for marriage and for child rearing, perfectly capable of bringing up kids on their own.
I just think that a young man who is experienced his father going through a divorce, his uncle going through a divorce, and his brother going through a divorce is going to finally start to say, I don't need this. Not for me. And I think that that's what we're experiencing.
You think we're smart enough?
I don't know if we're smart enough. You know, there was an idea for a while to give women rights and give women some more rights and give women even more rights. And now it became stupid. It became a joke. Now it's a joke. Now some cunt makes up a lie because she's screwed up and loves the attention. And it destroys your life. I mean, destroys you. And there's no one who can turn it off. You go to court 100 times. There's no one to say enough. And everyone knows it's not true. And there you are being prosecuted. And the prosecutor knows it's not true and doesn't give a shit. Okay? That is fucked up.
That is totally fucked up.
I'm not going to get involved in something like that. And I go on a date with a woman. And she starts talking to me about her dream of getting married someday and having children and blah, blah, blah. And I'm already halfway out the door because I have no interest in fulfilling her life for her because I know there's no upside to that. She's not going to appreciate it. She's not going to appreciate me. And I could be the richest, smartest, tallest, whatever guy in the whole wide world. she's going to regard me as a piece of shit. Okay? And I can't have that. I like myself too much.
You are definitely bringing reality into here. And we've talked off air for the last couple of years when I was going through some stuff, and you had to smack me several times, and it hasn't turned me into a guy that hates women. It's turned me into someone that loves myself more and has.
I am not a proponent of hating women.
No, you're not.
I don't think you should kill women. I don't think you should smack women. I think that the domestic violence laws were created to deal with a really serious problem. And domestic violence is a terrible problem. And I think it's horrible when men and women hurt each other in the context of relationships and marriages. But things have gotten to a point now that it's absolutely out of control. And when people say, oh, yeah, well, we need new legislation. No, we don't. Okay? The system is irretrievably broken. Okay? Anyone who's a lawyer who's involved in the system knows exactly what I'm talking about. I can't have anyone with a straight face tell me that it works. It doesn't work. It's a complete catastrophe. And as every day goes by and more laws are passed, it only gets more and more entrenched. And there's no way to get rid of it. There's no way to fix it. The only way you're going to be able to function in life is to avoid it completely. Okay? That's reality. And by the way, I'll give you a good example. Guys talk about prenuptial agreements. Guys say, well, I'm getting married, I'm scared, but I'll have her sign a prenuptial agreement and I'll be okay. No, you won't. I'll give you a good example. The Dodger owners at one time were the McCourts.
Right.
They went through a very acrimonious divorce. Now, Jamie McCourt, the wife, had a prenuptial agreement with her husband. And she said that she didn't understand it. And she was forced to sign it. And she didn't know what it said. And she wasn't sophisticated. Her husband took advantage of her. And guess what? The court accepted that. Oh, and did
now,
I
we do know we do what? Know she's an attorney, of course.
Oh, I was just going to get to that.
All right. Sorry for stepping on your... Right.
No, but I mean, the woman was a lawyer, okay? And here she is crying, as every woman does. Oh, goo-goo mama, I'm a little girl. I don't have a brain. I don't know what I'm doing. He made me do it. I didn't understand what I signed. Well, the court fell for that bullshit. And if the court is going to accept something like that, coming from an attorney, for God's sake, okay, a woman lawyer, I mean, who could be much more sophisticated than that? Okay? And if the judge
That's
is going to accept a woman lawyer claiming that she didn't understand what she was doing, et cetera, then in my opinion, you are screwed. Okay?
We are screwed. We are. And we have a caller coming in. I'm going to make a comment on the McCourt divorce settlement, and then we're going to bring in longtime TV and radio announcer Fred Wall. And hold on one second, Fred, we'll bring you right in. But just following up on the McCourts, Jamie McCourt thought that Frank McCourt was going to go bankrupt because he was forced by Major League Baseball to sell the Dodgers. But so she said, I'll take that $130 million and give me these houses. Frank McCourt said, he fought and squirmed and all this, but he gave her that. And that was her second negotiation. Well, Frank McCourt was a lot smarter than Jamie gave him credit for. And he got $2.150 billion from the Guggenheim Group, who I shall refer to as Triple G, Greedy Guggenheim Group. And that's a sports topic. But Jamie felt like she got cheated because she thought by taking the $130 million in these five or six luxury houses that her husband, Frank McCourt, who was living in a one-bedroom suite at the Beverly Hilton Hills Hotel, would end up with destitute, with probably less than $5 million. Well, when you're talking about $100 million, that's it. But she was pissed off, just like you're talking. She was angry that he was able to sell the team, pay off the creditors, and walk away with a fortune. That
in other words, as I was saying, it's never enough, right?
Never enough. Never enough. And with that,
so do you think that you're going to be able to sit down with Jamie McCourt and speak rationally with her and say, Jamie, you're getting $130 million. You never worked a day in your life. Why don't you shut the fuck up?
No, I'm going to be able to be her security guard and fuck the shit out of her and not have two nickels to rub in between my legs. And eventually she's going to dispose of me, and she's that's going to be her motivation to be with me. It's because I'm servicing her for the time being. And
well, I think you're kidding. I think you're kidding yourself.
Well, that's
you're
the way
too classy she was, a guy. She's gonna want to screw the pool boy, I would say.
Oh, there you go. Probably. Let's bring in.
You're a creep.
Yeah, I am a creep. I'm the guy that asks a girl to, if I'm just, it's on a first date or second date, flash your light to make sure that everything's okay when you get in the house. That's being too nice and being a creep. Absolutely.
By the way, I agree with you.
You know, that definitely put me into the too nice category.
I got to tell you this. If you do that, what you just described, the woman will be so turned off.
Yeah, I know. It's too nice. Too nice. You know, if I walk away from her and talk wherever we're at and talk to a few other women, then it'll
now
be some. I'll be inaccessible.
Wow.
She'll
now,
be competing.
It'll be hysterical for you.
Crazy women. Crazy, and that's just the way it is. Let's bring in Fred Wallen. Fred, longtime TV sports anchor, radio personality, a guy that is never short on an opinion. You're in the sports maze with Adam Michael Sachs, attorney, men's rights attorney, plus a whole lot more. How are you tonight, Fred Wallen?
I'm okay. You know, I thought we'd be talking sports. Both of my brothers are attorneys, so I thought maybe we'd be talking legalities, and we are. But something that you guys were talking about, you know, on a personal basis, let me just tell you a quick story. When I was in my mid-20s, I fell in love with this woman, and we'd seen each other for two or three consecutive weeks every night, and then I said, you know, I'll come over later. There's actually a basketball game I want to watch. I'll come over later. She calls me up. She had told me this in advance, that she had just broken up with a boyfriend. So she calls me up and she says, I'm going back to my former fiance.
Yeah, there you go.
And it.
I saw that one coming.
Okay, so honest to God, anyways, she never married him in the end. She ended up marrying her roommate because he was sort of the guy that could console her whenever the case might be. But anyways, it broke my heart. For the next 10 years, this is no joke, I obviously saw women, but I compared them all to this one who I'd fallen in love with, and in my own head, it just didn't match. So I waited till my early 40s to get married, and we had a couple of false pregnancies. Now I'm in my late 50s, and it's too late. I'm an uncle seven times over, but in my own mind, I wasted my life because I didn't have kids. That's how important looking back, having kids would have been, but just because I allowed one woman, honestly, for a decade to control my life from three, I don't know how many, you know, where she moved to, but I'm just saying from miles away, she actually was controlling me. And I allowed that to happen. And I feel like an idiot now. And when I go to bed, you know, I feel like an idiot. And we actually my wife and I spent $14,000 on in vitro at one last chance a few years ago. But anyways, the point is, you know, this can happen, that, you know, you mentioned to women, it can happen to guys so easily that they can become sort of so enamored with one human being that nobody else matters.
That's called
hurting your own life.
One-itis, by the way.
I'm sorry?
That's called one-itis.
Yeah, and that's what happened to me, and I'm sure people listening, it's happened to a lot of people.
Well, how do you move on, Adam? What do you recommend? I think he should
work with me on surrogacy. he could have a child right now.
What do you think, Freddie?
I don't know why you did IVF, because that's less than, you know, one. I mean, it's all on television, but in reality, that's less than 1% likely to work. I won't take those odds. Why not have a child now on your own, or even with her?
Yeah, and all the nephews that you spoiled could help you out.
I would never, you know, not with my wife. But I'm just saying, you know, it's like I think it hurts me more than it hurts her. I think I needed a kid more than my wife does. We have a little Sheltie that Michael was listening to in the background, and he's become our child. But my point is, I think it actually bothered me more than it bothered my wife. I mean, I think she's fine with it. I'm not, and I wish that I had just lived my life differently. And then, and honestly, life goes by so fast, you don't realize how quickly. And you get to be our age, it's like, oh my God, where'd it go? And I have no conception of where it went.
Well, that, you know what, those years definitely go by from 40. They start clicking by like people going into an Irish pub tonight. Bang, bang, bang,
yeah.
Bang, bang.
Yeah.
And, you know what, I'll do my public service announcement tonight, by the way. Anywhere in the United States, do not drink and drive. The Automobile Club will tow your car and drive you home for free tonight, actually 365 days a year. You do not have to be a member. Use their Tipsy Tow service. They will take your car, they will tow it 7 miles, and they will drive you for free. Automobile Club of Southern California, if you're in California, AAA Automobile Club, free, Tipsy Tow. A lot of cab companies, and maybe even Uber is doing this, I don't know. The Asian cab companies are big on this, where they send out two drivers in one car, and they one guy drives your car back, and one guy drives your car back to your house. You cost a little bit more than one driver, but you have your car in the morning. Don't drink and drive. Adam, how much does it cost just for someone to get out of jail on a DUI in California?
Well, they've stopped doing bail, generally speaking, on a first offense. But a DUI overall, in terms of your punishment and everything else, it costs you $10,000. Not worth it, huh?
You know, my wife and I just left a Irish restaurant, and it's like 6:20, and they're already really drunk. So, folks, what Michael just said, please listen to him and call the Automobile Club if you are in such a situation.
Yeah, and Uber's easy enough, and I've seen the sobriety checkpoints, and the odds are against you guys. You know, they call them license and sobriety checkpoints. I just sat out on Ventura Boulevard on one of my exciting summer Saturday nights and watched these Gestapo police run after people in the middle of the street who didn't actually see that it was a checkpoint in Sherman Oaks. You know, people aren't used to guys running after them in the middle of the street. It was just, you know, at watching, I felt so bad for a lot of the people that weren't obviously impaired, but they were being yelled at, and they were scared more than impaired. And when they were getting their cars towed, and they had like a little booking desk set up there, it was just horrible intimidation by the police. Avoid it by bars should really do a better job by taking people's keys away, and there should be something to help out the patrons from getting in trouble, really. Just
to the next level and prepare to, if you're going to drink, prepare not to drive. That's what I have to say about that. So, again, the Automobile Club has free towing and free drives home all across the United States. And do that. Don't drive. We have Fred Wallen on with Adam Michael Sachs, and we're talking about men's rights, legal rights, and also the changing dynamics of households, relationships, because men have been and will continue to be on the short end of any failed relationship, which is definitely two-thirds in the odds of being a failed relationship. So we're talking about men on their own, straight guys, who want to have children, just going and using a woman, a paid woman, for as a what's the politically correct term for a breeding receptacle, Adam?
A surrogate.
And are there any of these? We know that there's surrogates in the United States, but are there any of these businesses that specialize for single straight men that kind of are like the Underground Railroad for straight men that want to have a family that you know of?
Well, that's going to be me.
That's
the reality. Well, is it's not funny. What ends up happening States with surrogates is that you pay a woman a lot of money, she gets pregnant, and then she won't give you the baby. And there are cases now where the surrogate represented a man and a woman and then sued them for child support, refused to give the child that she bore for them as genetically not hers. And then she sues them for child support and wins, by the way. So I think the only way to do it is international, as I've discussed, and that's going to be the wave of the future.
Wow. You talk about, a woman that's just really an incredible kick in the butt, to bear a child, take the money, and then sue for child support. That is a real piece of work. It definitely is. Why don't you let all the listeners know where they can get in touch with you? That's Adam Michael Sachs Law Offices. But start writing this down. Let everybody know, Adam, okay?
Sure. Call me toll-free, 1-800-340-7320. That's 1-800-340-7320. Check out my website, www.adamlawyer.com. Send me an email, adam@adamlawyer.com.
There you go, adamlawyer.com. Very, very easy, 800-340-7320. And that's Adam Michael Sachs. So, we're gonna switch gears just a little bit because everybody's been involved in the political conversation. Normally we'd go into sports commentary. Actually, we're gonna do one sports commentary on what's going on in Chicago with Adam LaRoche. He's an average player, 200 hitter. He had a 200 batting average, 207, and he got a 2-year contract last year with the Chicago White Sox. It is alleged by Yahoo Sports that in that contract, he negotiated that his teenage son, who was 12 at the time, would be able to come to work with him every day. And a lot of players have their children come.
You've seen Stephen Curry with his little daughter, but not, and other athletes, and it's more prevalent in baseball for the Bobby Bonds bringing Barry Bonds and all that, bringing their kids to play. But the White Sox embraced Drake LaRoche, that's the son of Adam LaRoche, so much, they gave him a locker in the locker room. So this seemed to just be going fine. But yesterday, the president of the White Sox said that, maybe you shouldn't be bringing Drake every day to the stadium. And there was no incident, nothing, and all the players really liked the kid. He would help catching the ball when they were hitting fungo and didn't get in the way whatsoever. Just a really, really good kid by all accounts. And a couple of the players, even an all-star pitcher, said, this isn't right that you're doing that. And by the way, Adam LaRoche retired yesterday, leaving $13 million on the table. But so today, watching Colin Cowherd, he talked about, it's a workplace and, you shouldn't bring your kids to the workplace. And he talked about baseball being 162 games and it's not like football where you're in and out. It's quick paced and there's only 16 games, and basketball, you're in and out. And he talked about the sanctity of the major league locker room. And then it's like, oh, all right, Callan, I got it. So that's Fox. ESPN, you have Skip Bayless and Stephen A. Smith. They were both, it's nice to take your kids, but not every day. And so they're talking about that. But, every day, that maybe is just too much to do. But no one talks about that. It was part of his contract. That's alleged by Yahoo. But here's the bigger story. The president of the Chicago White Sox is African American, and Adam LaRoche is white, Caucasian. Now there's no white advocates group saying, wait a minute, this is racist. You're a black manager. You're the man. You're keeping him down. You let other parents bring their kids in. It's in the contract, and you're not letting you're black, and you're not letting a white guy's kid come in. He didn't do anything. But I like to spin the paradigm. I call it the Mays 180 paradigm, and I talked about it, and we talk about it with how unfair things are regarding men and women. Well, let's talk about if it were a white president and a black player where he had it in his contract to be able to bring his kid every day, and they put a locker in the locker room. Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson not be on their podium? How about Stephen A. Smith? Would he have not played the race card? Now, I'm not suggesting to play the race card. I'm just suggesting that the race card wasn't played, but there is a racial element here. They're two different races. That's it. In the sports maze, we're now going to welcome also the head of Mark Mancini Sports Stables, Mark Mancini, and we have Fred Wallen also, and attorney Adam Michael Sachs. I'm going to first throw this over to Adam Michael Sachs, then over to Mark Mancini, then Fred Wallen. What do you think of the situation if, in fact, this was part of Adam LaRoche's contract to be able to bring his kid into the locker room, Adam?
I can't help you. I don't know anything about sports, dude. I'm sorry.
All right. Thought it might fall under contract law. Let's throw this over to Mark Mancini, head of the Mancini Stables, heard in over 100 cities weekly. Mark, what's going on?
Yes. Well, I'm blessed to be a part of this show along with another great guy on there, Fred Wallen, and your other friend on there. I look at the situation, and I've always been for the players and the fans. We got a situation in Los Angeles where the Dodgers sold their soul, and they're sitting on tradition here and jacking prices up, and they're putting an inferior product on the field, and we've seen what that product is. It's Mickey Mouse. Now we go into Chicago with the White Sox situation, and putting everything aside, it's a guy that's got it in his contract to bring his kid to work. It's a good environment for the kid to be around, helping out, you know, seeing what dad goes through in the environment. The White Sox handled it, you know, the way the Dodgers handle their operations. Sometimes it's unbelievable the way this whole thing is played out. And now it's gotten to the point where the guy just says, you know what, I don't want your organization no more, and I don't want your money. And it's happened in football and with certain guys with the whole head trauma and things. And now it's happening in baseball where family comes first. And a lot of guys are coming out on this. Bryce Harper has backed them up. Quite a few other guys. You've named a few and everything. And, you know, these companies, I think they talk on both sides of their mouth when they run a company. You know, they talk about, you know, how they want to create a family type of atmosphere, but they don't know the word about family and care and being genuine. My dad was a sergeant in the Marines, and he always used to say, son, nobody cares what you know until they know how much you care. And I think all this mumbo-jumbo and these slogans they throw out there and we're the team and the beat and all that, I just look at this organization now and kind of think to myself, it's a real head-scratcher. Because if you talk about family and everything else and you're trying to get family days in your city and everything, how can you have that when you can't even work a problem with your own player that's part of your payroll? So I think the Chicago White Sox really need to be looked at on this situation because, I mean, this is a family first. And, you know, if it was the other way around, I'm sure they'd do it. And if you want to take it one step further, guys, you know, if Bryce Harper brought his kid into Washington, and I don't think anybody would go up to him and tell him you can't have your kid there. Because, you know, they wouldn't want to see him out of the city and, you know, sign a big contract somewhere else. So I think the Chicago White Sox have just fallen in the same line of corporate greed. They don't quite understand what's going on around here. It's family first and the players first. And you really look them in the eye and tell them what they mean to you. Just a new way of doing business.
So what do you think? You think that there might be some repercussions? You know, you're always kind of politically correct there, Mark Mancini. Do you think that there might be an outcry if there was a white president and a black player, and the black player was asked to scale back, bring in his son half the time? You know,
well,
yes or
you
no?
Know, yeah, you know, I don't know if that would be the thing, you know, as far as that, maybe there would be. I don't know quite the answer, but I'm looking at a situation, regardless of what color they are and everything, I'm looking at a situation where the guy is basically saying, we don't need your son in our locker room now. And it's basically, you know, it's Stables first. I'll give you an example. I had a guy tell me one time he didn't like a guy in one of the cities. He didn't think he was knowledgeable. And I basically told the guy, he ain't going anywhere. You need to listen to another sports show. So you got to have the backs of your guys. And you got to tell them what they mean to you. And, you know, I look at it like that. I look at it as a situation where a guy is sitting there telling him you can't bring your kid into the locker room, and it's in your contract. It's in your contract, and you're going to know it's a public outcry if the guy basically tells you he doesn't want your $13 million. And, you know, now it's gone to the thing where family comes first, and there's a rallying cry around this guy, and rightfully so. You
yeah,
know?
There is
and
a
I look
rally.
At it like this. I look at it like this, and I'll say it right on your show. I can get ticked up tomorrow, but I got to get my stable guys involved in it. I have to get them involved in it. They're the ones that made me. I didn't make them. They made me. and they're a big part of it. So I'm family first, you know, taking care of your own, and then I can worry about everything else out there. And, you know, it's a situation where, you know, I'm looking at organizations and I'm kind of, you know, scratching my head saying, wait a minute here, this is not right. This guy wants to bring his kid in there. I don't see the kid jumping around, and everybody seemed to embrace it. Adam Eden was one of the guys that said, yeah, we embrace it. You know, this is a guy that might be thinking, you know, he's going to throw his power around. I don't know.
Mark, let me just throw this out, and I wish things could happen as easily as we all wish they could happen. But obviously Kenny Williams here put the hammer down because some players went behind other players' back to go to Kenny Williams and said, I don't want his son there. That's the only reason he would have done this. So my point is the players that are now speaking out in favor of him, that's great. But I guarantee you, and I think Clayton Kershaw is the best pitcher in baseball, but obviously he made the crack about trading Puig in the offseason. There's no question about that. Things like that happen on a team. So let's say five guys went behind everybody's back and went to Kenny Williams and said, we don't feel comfortable with a 14-year-old kid here. We might say something that a 14-year-old kid shouldn't hear. So Kenny Williams is sort of in the middle. The White Sox were insane for putting that in the contract. There's no question about it. And in a perfect world, nobody would worry about the kids who are there. But maybe five kids or three. I mean, I don't think the president of a team or the general manager of a team is going to go and cause trouble unless some of the players on that team go to him. So there's got to be something more to this than we're talking about. And I do agree with Michael that if it were a situation which was reversed, people would try to make a racial thing out of this. I mean, obviously it's not a racial thing. This is just a stupid contract that the White Sox signed. But I guarantee you, I mean, Adam LaRoche may be the greatest guy on earth, but I guarantee you not everybody among the 25 guys likes him. Not everybody likes me. Not everybody likes you. Not everybody likes anybody. So somebody or two people or three people went behind the back and caused all this, but they've got their rights too. And, you know,
well, I think, yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No,
you know, we're going to come back to this subject in a second. I want to first thank Adam Michael Sachs for joining us. Adam's been with us since the 5 o'clock talking about men's rights, and I'm so appreciative. Now people could listen to you also on every week on Com Like.
You know what I was? Go ahead. I was thinking about this thing you guys are talking about. Like I said, I'm not a sports guy, but you know, Will Smith now is such an egomaniac that if you want him to do a movie, you have to put one of his children in the movie. And that was true in The Pursuit of Happiness, where they put in his son. And then there was a zombie movie where they put in his daughter. And I was thinking about the connection about doing something like that, where you have this sports guy who says, my son has to be with me in the locker room. That's pretty wild.
Well, that's a good point. If you want a big box office guy, that I'm sure that you know, the it happens with a lot of there's a lot of nepotism or demands like that made in Hollywood. You know, make sure that my cousin, my niece, my nephew is in the production crew. Oh, girlfriend, there you go. Yeah, right. The
but it's the reason
couch.
they made the sequel to ID4, Independence Day, without Will Smith, and that's the reason.
Oh, wow, they really put their foot down. He must have demanded so much speaking part. And
well, because,
so much
no, because his, no, his son and him made a movie called like After Earth or something like that,
mm-hmm.
And it was a bomb. And the kid, the son is crazy, obviously. He's like wearing women's clothes or whatever.
Oh, and that's the same guy that was it in the Karate Kid, who I thought was pretty good in the Karate Kid sequel.
Go.
Well,
because Will Smith said, if you put my son as the lead, then I'll finance it.
Oh, no kidding. Well, he did a good job in Karate Kid, but
that's good.
You know, people could do, you know, when they people have an overinflated opinion about themselves, like we talked about with women, crazy things happen. It's not exclusive just to women, but very interesting that, you know, Will Smith is living in his own bubble now with those demands.
He lives right near me, by the way, in my neighborhood. Here in Calabasas, California, and you can see that he's not exactly 100%.
That's something. Maybe I'll have to take a drive out to Calabasas, and next time I'm visiting my friend in Agoura, and check out the landscape on a nice Sunday afternoon when the 101 isn't so crowded. Well, again, thank you so much for joining the Sports Maze today. Again, people can listen to you on Tom Likas every Tuesday from
six Pacific time.
6 o'clock. That's Tom Likas. So I feel honored and great company to have you know doing your and also doing a regular show with Tom Likas. Thank you so much again. It's attorney Adam Michael Sachs. You can reach him again. He practices law in California, Alaska, New York, Arizona, Washington D.C. Did I leave a state out? You can reach Adam at 800-340-7320. Get a free consultation. 800-340-7320. That's www.adamlawyer.com. And the email is... What is the email? It's Adam Lawyer, but I didn't get down
Adam
the exact.
AdamLawyer.com.
AdamLawyer.com.
Yep.
There we go. Well, thank you so much for giving the Sports Maze and giving us an extended time today, and we'd love to have you back as soon as you can. And thank you so much for sharing everything, guys. Give Adam a call. Remember, it's better to do your research ahead of time than to regret it and say, I wish I would have called him. Take care of business. Take care of business. Again, thanks a lot. And we're going to, Adam, thanks a lot. Anything you want to leave people with before we go on? All right, my man.
I want you to think outside the box, guys. Think outside the box.
Thank you, my man. I really appreciate it. Have a great, great evening. Chag Sameach, and take care.
Thanks. Take care.
Bye-bye. All right. It's sports time, guys. We got Fred Wallen and Mark Mancini.
I'm on with two of the best. I wanted to reiterate, Fred, what you were saying about Clayton Kershaw going to management. I look at it as a different situation here because I think 24 guys didn't like Yasiel Puig on this team. That was a recurring issue, and this was a guy that needs to be gone if he's just bringing the whole team down. You know, it's a dynamite keg that's just completely going overboard, and you can't go forward with that. I think on the other situation, if I'm Kenny Williams, and I've got four guys coming to me and saying, you know, I don't like this, I would sit down, and I think the biggest thing what he's lacking is communication. He's taking what somebody's saying. And he's running with it, and he's just making a I don't want to say an asinine decision, but he's making a decision where he's not sitting down and trying to work something out. You're running a 25-man ball club.
But the problem is these guys don't want to be known as the guys who go to them. So you can't sit them down together. So that's impossible because you make an enemy forever.
Yeah.
It's an impossible situation.
You don't want to be the guy running to him. I don't know what ball club has it now. I just heard it. I don't know if it's a Diamondbacks or some ball club. I just heard they sit down, they air everything out every day, and then they move forward. And that's a ball club that I can see that's going to be going places because there's no lingering effects. And if I'm a manager or I'm a general manager, I'm getting up 2 hours prior to these guys going out there, and I'm talking to them. I'm communicating with them. Family good? Everybody good? Anything on your mind? How you doing? And when you take the time to go up to somebody and speak a few words, you know, a guy told me one time, encouragement lasts 2 months. When you encourage somebody, it lasts 2 months, and then they got to keep, you know, then you keep reiterating it in a different way. But people like to know that you care about them. And I think the Chicago White Sox, Kenny Williams, really might have to take a class on how to communicate with players. I mean, regardless of the fact, if you're bringing guys in, it's a family member and other guys you can bring into. You know, everybody should have that option. But to stand here and take a side without communicating that problem or bringing it, that kind of thing behind the back should be brought up. In the meeting, saying, "Hey guys, we're going to have this situation. He just signed a contract. Does anybody have a problem with this?"
But nobody's going to say that in public. But no one's going to say that in front of the other guys, because if it's 22 against 3, you've now made an enemy with 22 people. So these three or these two guys or this one guy, whoever, you know, it's some number that went to Kenny Williams, and you know you're saying he's got to. Do his job, but he's also got to do the job for the three guys or the two guys or the one guy who's upset with the 14-year-old being there. I mean, it's a stupid contract. I mean, nobody thought about this in advance. Hey, is everybody going to like everybody else? No. We know that doing radio. We know that doing, you know, TV. We know that in the media. We know that in every aspect of life, politics, whatever the case might be. Not everybody's going to like everybody. So my point is you can't sign a contract like – without being idiotic, you can't say your kid can come to every game unless you've gotten the okay from the other 24 players, and the other 24 players change from year to year, so you can't even really do it even that way. So it's
– Well, Kenny Williams knew about the contract, so he's playing both sides of the coin.
Of course he is. And in the end, what's going to happen here is LaRoche is going to get his 14 – he's going to go to the attorney – he's going to get his $13 million, but he'll go with another team. That's the way it'll be, and no other team will ever sign a contract like this because the odds are just against you. There's going to be one guy always who's not going to like it. I mean, that's just the way of the world. I mean, it's just, come on, look at these elections. There are people still voting for who are they? I mean, Ben Carson. I mean, you know what I'm saying. People are just going to be people, and they're different. And I'm as left wing politically as you could possibly be. I'm a.
You're not. You are not left wing, Fred. You just pretend to be.
Okay.
I don't really think you are. I'm going to make a prediction.
What is that?
In the general election, you're
right.
Going to be voting for Donald Trump.
No, believe me, my grandmother.
You won't be able to vote for Hillary Clinton.
Well, Let me explain something.
And Bernie Sanders is not. It might just be the running mate of Donald Trump. Because they have at least 5 issues. I wish I had another hour on the air, but I only have 5 minutes. But I'm going to give it back to you, Fred. They have at least 5 social issues together. Go ahead, Fred.
I will prove to you where I'm coming from politically. Right now, are you sitting down?
I am sitting down.
My grandmother dated Leon Trotsky. My great uncle was his tailor. The old joke in the family was the reason that Stalin's people were able to kill him in Mexico is because the coat that my uncle made for him as a tailor, the zipper wouldn't open up. He couldn't get his gun out. So that's where I am politically. I knew by the age of 8 where my political side was going to be. My mom used to, and my dad wasn't political at all. My mom used to have blacklisted writers over the house in the late 50s talking about Richard Nixon, the creep that he was, Ronald Reagan, the creep that he was, and Joe McCarthy, the creep that he was, and these people were blacklisted as far as because of their politics. So that's where I am politically. My feelings toward Hillary go back to 20 years ago when he used the term serial predators about black kids in that time when they were pushing the welfare reform bill and things like that. I will never forgive her for that. And we'll never forget her for that. And Donald Trump, you know, I mean, obviously I'm not voting for Donald Trump, but my point is I think this nation right now is in a real mess. If the choice is Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, we're screwed. That's all I can tell you. You can't trust her as far as you can throw her, and you certainly can't trust him as far as you can throw him. And that's
well, Mick, can't you trust him, but maybe you just don't like him?
I don't like him. He's had four bankruptcies, and then he says, "Well, I didn't go bankrupt." No, he didn't go bankrupt, but his businesses go bankrupt, so 10,000 of people are out of a job.
That's not necessarily true. God, we only have a couple minutes. They were strategic corporate bankruptcies where companies used his name and they restructured rather than folded completely. So it wasn't a personal bankruptcy. It was the same thing happened to good
Romney?
To companies that we support, that to companies that are good liberal companies have needed to restructure under those same bankruptcy laws or go out of or people would lose their jobs. But believe me, 8 months ago, I hated Donald Trump for his attitude on The Apprentice. I hated Donald Trump because he lent his name to the Baja California development, which teachers, firemen, and policemen wanted to retire, and they lost all their money. I said, that son of a bitch. But
that's
I knew that years ago. I said, that son of a bitch.
Right.
And then what else? And moving fast forward, I didn't like that he made fun of the guy that had MS or something. I thought that's abominable. I hate that. And then he put the Israelis and the Palestinians on equal moral footing. I'll try to make a deal. It's like, are you nuts? You know, they've been trying to make a deal forever. That's very recent. The point being is that there are 19 issues that Bernie Sanders has that I think at least five or six, really, that Trump could push through. You can't get everything you want in politics, but I'd like the country to be safe. I'd like there to be legal immigration. I'd like there to be no whore Wall Street donations. I'll just stop at those three.
I would hope that Bernie Sanders would have the moral if he was asked, he would have the moral fortitude to say no, go screw yourself. And I believe he gets
0% of what he wants. Everybody. Mark Mancini Sports Stables this Tuesday, 4 to 6, followed by the Sports Maze Overtime, 6 to 8. Fred Wallen, Sports Byline. What time, Freddie?
Friday night, 10 o'clock, 10 p.m. Pacific time. Sunday morning, 9 a.m. Pacific time on the Sports Byline USA Broadcast Network.
Wow, Mark Mancini. Where else could they see you? KCAA. And finish this out.
Yeah,
Mark.
Well, I'm on the Sports Byline tomorrow with Fred at 10:22. Back on there on Monday with Jerry Burke at 10:30, And the stables, like you said, we just picked up six more people across the country. So it's just talents getting out there and telling people what we're all about. And it's a grassroots foundation where we give everybody a voice and an opinion, and that's what matters. But we will dissect that one, I'm sure, in the sports byline and again in the stables come Tuesday and in the overtime with the Kenny Williams saga.
Thanks, Michael, very much.
Hey, Freddie, thank you so much for calling in. I couldn't have asked for a better compliment of guys to finish out tonight's show. Fred Wallen, Mark Mancini, Mike Mays, the Sports Maze. We'll catch you again soon. Take good care of yourself. Remember, Tipsy Toe, the Automobile Club, free towing, free ride home tonight. We're out of here. Love you guys. Bye-bye.
Thank you.